Everyone, thank you for attending our meeting this evening. We're going to get started.
Pledge of Allegiance. Good evening, Commissioners. I'd like to take the roll call. I understand the chair is excused this evening.
That's correct.
Vice Chair Hurd is chairing the meeting.
Thank you.
Vice Chair Hurd?
Present.
Jenny Castillo, right. Commissioner Castillo?
Present.
Commissioner Griggs Murphy is excused. Commissioner Montgomery?
Here.
Commissioner Pitts?
Present.
And Commissioner Jung Lee?
Present.
Thank you.
Okay, Ms. Wright, can you hear me? Can you hear me, ma'am? Okay, I want to make sure. So we'll move to item number 3, approval of the minutes, and that's going to be April the 27th.
I'll move it.
Second.
Okay. All in favor? Aye. All right, motion passes. Thank you, Commissioners. Okay, moving on to item 4, old or unfinished business.
There is none.
And we have none. Okay, any modifications to the agenda? And you have two items?
Yes, we'd like to move 2 and 3 out of the consent calendar just to hear about the projects, please.
Okay, thank you, Commissioner. Okay, you got that, Director?
Yes.
And 3, okay. Great. Okay, so can we move on to new business?
Yes, good evening, Commissioners. Item number A is consideration of resolution approving the Oakland Housing Authority comprehensive budget, which includes the public housing program AMP budgets, the staffing plan for the fiscal year ending June 30th, 2016, and HUD certifications. And I would first like to thank the Budget Committee who sat with staff earlier this month and went over a presentation. We're going to repeat some of that presentation, so bear with us. But I think it's an interesting analysis of where we are and where we may have to be to conform to the new MTW extension agreement. So I want to turn it over. Tracy Stapler, who is our Chief Financial Officer, will lead, and is joined by Dominica Henderson, who's our Director of Planning, Implementation, and Compliance, and Michelle Hassan, who's our Director of Leased Housing.
Thank you.
Good evening, Commissioners.
Okay, you can start. Oh, okay. Good evening, Commissioners. What I'll do is give a brief overview of the current situation under the MTW program and also explain a little bit about what the current negotiations are for the agreement that will take the agency through the year 2028, and then I will turn it over to my very capable colleagues to conduct the rest of the presentation. So the first slide just describes the federal appropriations situation as of now. As you can see, there are relatively level set funding levels for this year as proposed by the Transportation, Housing, and Urban Development Committee. There are not that many changes. I think that there's an expectation that there will not be an actual budget that is finalized and approved, and that there will be a continuing resolution. And so we are still waiting to see what Congress, how Congress behaves and you know, how they move forward. But at this point, we expect that the last column, the fiscal year 16 column, is the best case situation, best case scenario. And probably will be a continuing resolution to take us through the next period. The agency's current MTW agreement looks a little, actually a lot different than what HUD is proposing, and so I just wanted to give a reminder of the high-level details of the current agreement. Right now, OHA has the MTW authorization, so we have the single fund flexibility, meaning that we're allowed to have our capital fund, our public housing operating subsidy, and our housing choice voucher funds, instead of keeping them in isolated and independent funds, we are able to put them in one single fund and use that money interchangeably. So it allows 100% fungibility at this point, and we don't have to account for it in the same ways that a traditional housing authority would, capital fund for capital fund projects, voucher funds for vouchers only. We are able to mix it. Additionally, it does not, this, our single fund flexibility does not include VASH. It does not include our mainstream program. So some of the special purpose vouchers, as we call them, are non-MTW, and they're kept intentionally separate from the MTW vouchers, which is our large pool of a little over 12,800 vouchers. And additionally, right now, when we are reporting on our MTW plan, we are held to a compliance level of serving substantially the same number of families as we would prior to MTW. So we have a baseline. Each year that baseline is adjusted depending on whether or not we add vouchers or add public housing units. But basically how the baseline works is that it is the baseline that was set for the year before we became MTW. And then we compare against that every year what our performance is. And so that is also going to change under the proposed MTW agreement. So HUD at this point has presented two options to revise the MTW contract. Both of the options that they've presented eliminate that 100% fungibility, and they impose a utilization requirement in the voucher program. So their new proposed agreement really focuses on increasing voucher utilization. And so that is where they focus the most on this new agreement. And in addition to that, OHA must meet the utilization requirement in order to even be considered to execute the agreement. So it's a little bit different than what we heard, I think now 2 years ago, when we went to the MTW conference. I think that it's a more strict and more higher level to be able to sign the actual agreement. Another condition of the new agreement requires the Oakland Housing Authority to maintain that utilization requirement annually. So in addition to having to meet the utilization requirements, which will be explained a little bit later, we also have to meet those requirements every year. So it's not just you know, in the year that we sign the agreement, but it's maintained throughout the years, which is at times challenging and has impacted the way we have developed the budget for this year. Additionally, the statutory requirement of serving the substantially the same number, as I mentioned before, our baseline, that's under revision because we are being held to a higher standard. So we're trying to negotiate what substantially the same number really means. It's been a little, not open-ended, but we've been able to, it hasn't been a specific number. And I think that it's challenging now to be able to maintain all these different requirements and also serve the same, substantially the same number of families because the program requirements now are different. Additionally, the proposed contract, and this might, excuse me, might be a little bit of editorializing, but this proposed contract is more restrictive, and it really required us to change the way we not only develop the budget, but then maintain our department level spending throughout the year. The two options that they presented, that HUD has presented to the housing authorities, were one was presented in November, option one was presented in November, option two in March. Option one requires the housing authority to use 90% of its housing choice voucher funds on HAP payments, on local non-traditional programs, which would be our, for instance, the sponsor-based program, that's a local non-traditional program, and also development activities. And so option one was presented, and then in March, option two has two parts. It's 90% or more voucher funds on voucher HAP payments, as well as local non-traditional funding. They intentionally removed development from that option. And then we also could fall under the 90% of or more unit months and 85% of the funds. So that means that if we have 100% of the unit months are the number of months that are available to be leased. So what they're requiring is that 90% of those unit months are met and serving households. In addition to that, we're able to then bring down that funding percentage by 5% and have a little bit more flexibility.
To have, just to interject, the difference between 90% of Housing Choice Voucher funds is the funding allocation we get, we have to expend 90% on very specific activities. The second one in option two changes that a little bit, because what we're talking about is reaching a threshold of 90% of the households. So when we say unit months, voucher unit months, what they're really talking about are vouchers in hand. And you know, we currently baseline to 12,814, right?
Yes.
So that's how many vouchers were allocated from HUD. So we get money, and then they say, this is the most, this is your 100% voucher allocation, is 12,814 families that are MTW. What this is saying is if you do 90% of that, and as you know, we've always been well above 90% of that, if not above 100, then you get additional fungibility. You can go down to 85%. So you can use the 15% of the HAP money can be used to support police departments, resident family community partnerships, any development activities. So you have that fungibility. Before, we never had that floor. The 85% was never a requirement. It was whatever we made work out. Okay. Now they're trying to put a floor. They're doing it not to be disingenuous. They're doing it for some pretty valid reasons with things that are going on in other agencies that have not gone on here. So they're trying to address some concerns. It is harder to manage to this, though, because instead of managing to the units, the 12,814 units, we'll get to it in the slide, Michelle's going to start managing to a budget number instead, rather than the family served. Go on.
So I'll walk you through the beginning of this slide, but I think it'll be appropriate if Michelle takes over. What we did was list out in this slide a description of option one and option two, using the numbers that we have based on what we've been negotiating with HUD, the numbers that we've been using to negotiate with HUD. So the figures are from calendar year 2014. During the negotiations, HUD has presented to us the options and also the budget authority that they say that we have. And so we use those numbers to be able to develop these scenarios. And so I don't know if you want to take it over now or...
So when you're looking at the slide, you'll see our total budget authority, and that's our maximum dollars that we're budgeted for annually. We then have admin fees that are embedded. They've recently unembedded those admin fees, and they come to $15,652,272.
Let me explain that if you have.
Okay.
So the total budget authority includes all Section 8 figured, and we get an admin fee and we get a HAP fee. Housing assistance payment and an admin fee are the two funds that you get through Section 8. The admin fee is what normal housing authorities have to live with in terms of administering the program. Ours is, when they say unembedded, ours have been embedded, meaning it's one, they just give us one big allocation. The reason they have to separate it out is that one of the statutory requirements is that we don't receive more or less money than a normal housing authority. What has happened in recent years is the proration, the amount they funded, HAP, was somewhere around 84%. Mm-hmm. Admin fees, 67, maybe 72, so there's a difference. So we were getting more administrative fees than other agencies because ours was embedded with the HAP and prorated at 84%. So what HUD has to do is separate it out and prorate them based on whatever Congress allocates. So that's what they're doing here. They've given us this fee number, the 15, and it's prorated. So when we say unembedded, they're pulling it out from the general big bucket because they have to allocate both those funds according to Congress's allocation. They can't just do one.
So additionally, there are special purpose vouchers that are pulled out, and those are our VASH and our mainstream, and they account for just under 400 vouchers. So we take that $2 million out, and the net budget authority for our vouchers is $196,369,692, or 13,635 vouchers. We have two options, as the slide said previously, to fund at 90% or 85%.
And I want to say these aren't options. These are options that are currently under discussion. We don't have a choice at this point. We don't know which choice is going to be. We just want you informed and us prepared for a decision.
So what we've decided to show you are what the HAP expense would be funded at 92% or 87.5%. And you'll see the HAP dollars there that we would have to expend on vouchers in order to meet those two percentages.
And the reason we've used those percentages is if we are having to manage to 90%, and if you have to stay above 90% or you're non-compliant and get kicked out of the program, you're not going to manage to 90%. It's too close to the line. You're going to back it up to 92%. And we feel the same way about the 85% floor. You'd manage to 87, 87 and a half, so that at the end of the year, you're not risking compliance.
How we get to the next number is the estimated leasing is that you take the $180 million or $171 million. Our average HAP is about $1,000 per month. If you take that, divide it, and then divide it by 12 months, you come out with the households that we would have to serve at 100%, at 92% HAP expense, and then at 100% at 87.5. And then if we decided to serve at, if in fact we were required to serve at 90%, those would be the estimated households that we would have to serve.
So to back this out one more time, because it gets confusing, there's so many 90%. And it's a hard, it's an important concept, so I want to make sure everybody has a chance to kind of absorb it for a minute. So we have the HAP expense goal. This is what we have to spend, and we'll do option two. So we're looking at option two, the lower one. It's the 85% floor, saying that we have to spend at least 85% of our dollars on housing assistance payment or like programs. And that would be, that goal would be $171 million. 171.8, because that would get us to 87.5. So we have a little room in case we don't expend as much if there's issues. The number of households that equals to for 100% of the world, if we were going to do 100%, it would be 14,319 families, which is serving more families. Mm-hmm. Not a bad thing. What HUD is requiring us, though, is only to serve 90% of that for the baseline serve. So that's where you really get the 12,887. Because they're giving us the 10% for fungibility to try and do what's required in the statute, which are economic opportunity, housing choice, development, the things that we do every day. So they're saying, no, we'll benchmark the number of families served to 90% of the 100% of this calculation. Okay. And then what would Michelle could choose to baseline our program probably to 12,887. Mm-hmm. What I've really asked is we switch and kind of look at the money. Okay. As well, instead of just the number of households. Okay. And if you think about it, 12,887 is not far off from 12,814. Mm-hmm. All right.
So currently we're at just under 95%, around 12,000 vouchers. So there are about 800 vouchers that we could lease up in the coming year or 6 months or as soon as possible to meet that 90% threshold. Any questions on that slide?
Any commissioner? I'm sorry, did I miss someone? Did you have a question? Commissioner Castillo?
When is this going to figure out?
So that's an interesting question, because what you notice is we're planning about something that's not written in law yet, in our agreement yet. What we're doing is benchmarking to the lower one through the budget. What we're hoping we'll negotiate with HUD is we have our complete authority under our current agreement through 2018. Okay. In 2019, we have to be at these benchmarks or we won't be able to participate in the program. Mm-hmm. What HUD is saying is once these benchmarks are decided, whether it's 90 or 85 with development, without development, we will have to maintain that throughout the agreement. Right. So what and when you deal with a large Section 8 program, and goodness knows we have a large Section 8 program, it takes a long time to steer the ship. Mm-hmm. You're not going to get lease up that quickly. Mm-hmm. You can only have so many vouchers in the street at a time, or you saturate the market. Mm-hmm. It takes time to move that dial. And although our agreement is going to hopefully have a provision in it that says we have to have these upon execution, but give us the dates that we have to meet benchmarks and have to be compliant by 2019, because that's the last talk around we've had with HUD. They were open to that idea, although that's new. Before they were saying we couldn't sign the agreement until we had reached these goals. Now I requested that we should be able to sign them and then reach the goal by the end of our current agreement and have our fungibility in between. Those are all where the negotiations are. What we know is we need to make sure we get as close as we can to compliance with what is currently being thrown around the table so that we can get there soon enough. Because we don't comply now. They're in our, we comply in the number of families served. We far exceed it. We have HAP funds that we don't use within the 90% because they're being used for the development things we've done in the past years. Mm-hmm. Additionally, they've been benchmarking us originally to 2013, which was not a fair benchmarking year at all because we had a lot of development going on and we quit issuing vouchers for a number of months and it sort of was a funny year. So we set out with this budget to be the stepping stone to compliance under the new agreement.
So my final question is, how are we incorporating the higher rents that we are seeing, the significantly higher rents that
I agree.
Are seeing?
And yeah, do you want to talk about?
And there's a part of that in the presentation we'll talk about in terms of our goals, how to meet them.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay, one more question. Thank you, Mrs. Shawn. You indicated that we have 800 vouchers we can lease up. Okay, so what is that process?
Well, it will take a while to lease 800 vouchers if we decide we're going to lease the whole 800. But keep in mind, what we're managing against is the budget, not the number of families anymore. And that's what you'll get to. Because if you have a voucher and you estimate, these are estimated, the vouchers on that we're calculating are estimated that we're providing housing assistance on average of about $1,000 per month per family.
Okay.
That becomes $1,200 or $1,300. Very quickly, you eat through the money that you thought you could serve the 800 families, and it may turn out it's only 400. And that's the balancing act of this program. And we would be, we can go over 100%. So we can go over the 12,814 figure and go up to maybe 12,800 if the math works out. But it's up to us. We have to manage to that money because if we go over and expend it, we're not going to get any more money from HUD.
Thank you, Director. Is that going to be? Okay.
And I would say in the agreement, part of the talk is how do we serve, if the funding does not support the families, that we have that 12,814, we can lower, it provides a formula to lower the number of families that we're obligated to serve because of the rentals. So it could be that we end up serving, in answer to what you do, serving fewer families, than, you know, based on the rent market.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
The next slide speaks to our current housing subsidy and unit count. As you'll see, 12,814 MTW vouchers, and then our other vouchers are mainstream vouchers at 175. We have an allocation of VASH vouchers at 326, and our local non-traditional households at 130 households. And in that MTW, do note that those are our port bills, our homeownership families, our project-based voucher families, as well as our family reunification vouchers are all in that 12,814.
And just to let you know, currently the MTW agreement only considers the MTW vouchers and the local non-traditional as MTW programs. And so VASH and mainstream are not, and so we don't report on them in the MTW plan, and we don't utilize our MTW efficiencies with those programs. But with the 2028 agreement, this whole pie would be considered part of the MTW program.
And we have, as OHA, advocated strongly not to include the special purpose vouchers because they are not MTW. They're excluded from our program. And also because, as you know, we've been having challenges with lease-up of the VASH voucher allocation locally and the referrals from the VA. And although we've been in real interventions with HUD and the VA of late with Michelle to try and resolve that, I'm not the most optimistic person. This, we have not leased this up well since its inception because we don't get the referrals from the VA. Now, they have they've significantly improved in the past couple of months. We desperately want to use these vouchers. If we don't, we wish somebody would take them and use them. We've offered a lot of interventions, I would tell you, along the way, and written a lot of letters, which is why we're having these broader and more intense discussions with the VA. But I don't think we should be penalized for that in the 90% utilization. So I wanted them to exclude the vouchers. What I was told by the Deputy Assistant Secretary is that it's only us and a handful of other of the 39 agencies. Everyone else benefits by their inclusion because they've been able to lease them up. Now, I would tell you, I would think that handful are within 20 miles of where we're sitting tonight. The other MTW agencies in this area are all having lease-up struggles, and specifically BASH lease-up struggles beyond their regular one, because the rental market has become so tight, because landlord participation is less likely when they don't need tenants. So you have five MTW agencies in the state of California that are in a housing crisis, and I would say that only two of the five, San Bernardino and San Diego, are doing well with the BASH program. I do not think that Santa Clara, San Jose, that San Mateo, and certainly Oakland are not doing well with the BASH program. So we're hurt by it. We're going to do our best by the end of the year, and we're going to do everything we can think of to get our veterans housed. But I'm just telling you, we're getting hurt in this 90% because of that program.
And the next slide speaks to that information that Eric just shared. It basically tells you how our goals have changed from fiscal year 2015 to 2016. 2015, as long as we serve substantially the same number of families, we were in compliance, again, utilizing 100% of the 12,814 MTW vouchers. We minimized the unabsorbed port outs. And the special purpose vouchers, VASH and Mainstream, which are about 500, were excluded. So this is how we worked, have been working. We would look at the number of vouchers out of the 12,814. We'd stay at around 95% of that utilization, and we generally were okay. What we found was that, unfortunately, we were not spending enough HAP dollars, which is what is going to be managed in 2016. So now HUD is managing to HAP funding and not the unit months. So it's not so much lease up all 12,814, it's use your funds, your HAP dollars that you've been allocated. So that's a change in just how we manage from month to month. Additionally, they are including, as Eric said, the VASH and Mainstream, which certainly can bring your utilization down because they're just a little harder to lease. And the 87.5 funding does include the housing assistance payments, the subsidy payments for local non-traditional programs. So that's kind of the difference in how we're shifting monthly, quarterly, looking at the HAP dollars that we're expending versus the unit months.
And I also just want to say that it also points out there's still great opportunity in the program, and the work that the Special Needs Committee, Ad Hoc Committee, is doing around developing special programs all fits within this new model. So I don't want to be too depressed about the old model, because it's just a resistance to change. It does shift some of our ability to be fungible. We have to manage a little more tightly, and it means less development, but there's still an amazing opportunity for this agency to do amazing work in our city and with our families.
Okay, my turn. Tracy Stabler, Chief Financial Officer. So now I'd like to just walk you through how just operationally our budget works, and then we can turn it over to any questions you might have. So as a reminder, the MTW single fund consists of our three biggest income revenue sources from HUD, which is the Housing Choice Voucher, which includes the admin fees plus the actual HAP payment revenues, the public housing operating subsidy monies, and capital fund grant monies, which are all lumped into the one single fund. Our budget, just kind of a background, is what we call a functional income statement. So it follows and is grouped by the type of activities, both revenue activities and expense activities, based on how you would tend to either receive them or pay them out. So the next slide is to just kind of show you they're grouped roughly into four types of revenue: the MTW single fund, the housing revenue, which is tenant rents, our 501c3 OP, who receives HAP payments as a landlord, so that's revenues coming in, and then other miscellaneous tenant income. The next type of category is other revenue. This is just a whole miscellaneous type of activity where we get ground lease payments, we receive fraud recovery income that the police department goes out and collects on our behalf, other types of grants that we might receive during the year, et cetera. And then the last category is internal charges that we use to account for the movement of funds between the departments and between the categories within the authority itself. Those monies are then all combined, obviously, and then used fungibly to pay for all the expenses. Okay. So just to point out on the budget itself, where these are grouped, we follow, again, a functional income statement process, and we follow the HUD chart of accounts because we're required to file with them a financial data schedule every year. So on the left-hand side of the budget is the HUD chart of accounts that we follow, and then we put the revenue, the whole budget itself, I'll back up for a second, is presented hopefully to highlight the subtotals and the totals. So the revenue section is in green, and subtotals are in a lighter green, and then total categories are in a darker green. And then the expense categories are highlighted in blue. Again, the subtotals are in lighter blue, and the category totals are in darker blue. So in the revenue section, the MTW monies are grouped together. First, the housing assistance in group 7060, about the middle of page. And then the tenant revenues are in the 7030, closer to the top of the page. And then the miscellaneous revenues are in the 7100 section, about towards the lower half of the revenue section. And then finally, their internal charges are towards the bottom of the revenue section.
And these are all the large table, is what she's referring to. It's the same on the shorter table as well, but if you want to see all of our different entities, it's this one.
So then the expense side of the budget, we actually slice it and dice it a couple of ways. First, on the functional side, we use the categories to budget so we can determine what areas we're spending, particularly in the category of administrative versus program expenses. And then we take a second step and then determine which departments are going to spend those monies and who has the budget authority to monitor and keep them within the budget, and also then how we can allocate them. So those expenses on the functional side, again, will break down into administrative expenses, which are the salary and benefits mainly, the other cost of running the whole authority, which are, you know, your audit cost, your bank fees, the other types of, miscellaneous supplies, et cetera, to run the business. Then we have the tenant services and maintenance and operation costs. So all the cost of maintaining the public housing and the housing choice to keep it running and provide for all the service that we want for our tenants. Then we have the protective service and general expenses. Again, protective service being the police department that we use our fungibility to pay for, and general expenses such as insurance and outside fees, debt service, et cetera. And then the last but biggest category is our rehabilitation and our housing assistance. So that is the renovation cost of extraordinary maintenance that we pay for the OP renovations. And then, of course, our biggest category is the housing assistance that we actually pay out. So those expenses, again, we categorize them by the type of function they are. But then when we look at how to charge them, we have income-generating departments. So our public housing receives revenue from HUD. Our leased housing department receives the housing choice voucher monies, and the capital grants kind of flow through capital improvements into the site projects, the housing themselves. So what we end up having to do is somehow get the monies over to them so that they can pay the bills. So what we do is we allocate that through our cost allocation process. So I'm sorry, I jumped ahead. I was going to point on the budget where these sections are, but on the expenses, each of the blue categories on the second page of expenses is where total administrative costs, functional expenses are. At the bottom of the second page is the tenant services and the maintenance. At the top of, on page four, is where protective services and general expenses are. And at the bottom of page four of the budget is where the rehabilitation and the housing assistance expenses are.
And of course, what she's showing on the screen when it says the amount of payments, and you'll see the $615,000. Keep in mind, this includes CAHI, which has 41,000 residents who we subsidize in Northern California as well as OHA.
So on slide 20 is what I was talking about earlier about trying to get those expenses of functional expenses now allocated into the different sites that actually have the revenue to pay for the expenses. We assign them based on how they charge out. So our central office cost center is the group of cost centers that actually charge everybody. So that would be finance, the executive office, IT, human resources, procurement, and property operations. So since they pretty much touch every other department, they're the first category of charges that go out. The second group is the group of security and real estate development, because they actually charge a slightly smaller population. They're the second iteration of charges. And then our internal service centers, which is family and community partnerships, capital improvements, and the property management and asset management groups. Since they provide services more directly to those income-generating departments, the public housing sites and leased housing, they are the third group that charge. And then the last is pretty much the receiving sites that pay all the bills, which is the public housing sites, the OP sites, and the leased housing group. So on our budget, that is represented by going across the page instead of down. So we start with the columns that we have lettered going across. So starting from the left to the right is column D is the first one, which represents all the cost, central office cost center costs. Then the next group is the security and real estate development. And then the third is the family community partnerships, property management, capital, and asset management. And then the last group starting at column K is what we referred to as the income generating, the ones who pay the bills. So the AMP is all the public housing sites, leased housing group, and then our two blended component units, CAHI and OPI, and some of a column for our non-federal. So what we end up doing with the cost allocations then is we take the one that charges the most to the most groups, and then they charge out, and then the next group follows and then charges it out. Each one of those we try to represent in the budget in a separate line so it's a little clearer to track. So on the next slide, we just wanted to show you where those show up in the group called 9181, which is the cost allocation expenses. And the group is, the central office cost, the security, and then CID. And then some of those internal service groups actually directly charge. So when capital improvements work on a public housing site or on OPI, they will actually directly charge it. So that's also shown in the account 9433, but it's an allocation. And then the last one is 9710, which is the extraordinary maintenance, but there's direct charges from the CID group to there also. So the next slide is just a kind of visual representation of what the allocation does, where it starts with the central office cost, and they charge it out and call it allocated overhead expense, and they charge each of the three other groups, the security, the internal service groups, and the sites. And then the security expenses, which is the police department and real estate, they in turn charge their expenses to the internal service centers and to the sites as appropriate, and they call it security expenses. And then the internal service centers does a little bit of both. They do direct charges is how they charge it. And then their administrative piece of it is charged to the sites, again, as overhead expenses. And then lastly, the site program expenses has a small amount that they charge directly to the sites, who then pay the bills. So one of the small changes we did just visually last year in the leased housing, the columns that we used for them, we had columns L, and we had broken it out into what was the MTW column versus which were the special programs. This year we changed it, and what we tried to do is put, since our focus is on what we charge for voucher utilization versus what we do administratively, we actually just put the voucher in one column, and then column that has no letter is the leased housing voucher column. And then column L is actually the administrative portion of how we're spending the administrative fees. So that is kind of physically how the budget works operationally. The one thing I would point out when you're looking at it, we also included the budget this year that provided last year versus this year and the variance from year to year. I would just warn when you look at it, the variances are going to be all over the place, mainly because we changed the approach of how we're doing it. Since we're not budgeting exactly the same, then particularly with the utilization and we're budgeting to the leased housing, that housing choice voucher budget authority versus the actual, there's going to be some very big swings in the numbers back and forth. Also because we're trying to get that utilization down to an acceptable level that kind of required us to take very hard looks at our administrative costs. So on the central office cost center, we tried to cut it back to as near to the bone as we could. And then on some of the other departments that we thought were going to impact the administrative costs, they also tried to cut back and make it as realistic as possible. So if you had any questions on the budget is operating.
Commissioners?
Go ahead. I have a couple of questions. One is, I think you said that what we could get from HUD is $212 million, but in your revenue page, we can get, it's projected that we will get $677 million.
That's, yes. That's the CAHI. If you look at the big table, the big fold-out,
okay.
What you're looking at is different. If you look, what we provided you, the rest of the packet, and we'll get into the different departments, one is the table that we've always provided you year after year. I think it was last year, the year before, we did the variance table. This is OHA only. Mm-hmm. So this is only the OHA stuff. This table has everything on it. Everything includes California Affordable Housing Initiatives, which distributes a considerable amount of money to 450,642,000 worth of HAP to Northern California properties that we do under work with HUD. So it skews the whole budget when we roll it up. That's why we like to give you both. So it's if you look, though, you have the big lease. You look under the leased housing, which is leased L, mm-hmm. and you go down, you should see at the very bottom of leased housing, I think we put it at the end, right? The HAP money that comes into leased
correct.
Housing?
Well, no, the HAP money is in the center of page one, and how that is represented, as I said, we put what is going to be the HAP revenues themselves versus, as Michelle had mentioned earlier, there is an implied admin fee that's embedded in that $212 million. So what we did was we separated out that $15 million that she had said were embedded admin fees. Mm-hmm. And then we also calculated, based on that 87.5% utilization, that would have left us 12.5%. of the $196 million. So those two numbers put together are in column L to represent the admin fees.
So the admin fees are the only things in L. So where is the leased housing
is right next to it.
Is
yeah.
173,269. Do you see?
Right.
And yeah. if you add those
that's
two together, that's your $212
million. Yeah.
Okay. CAHI is
465. Yeah.
So you get another pot of funds from HUD for CAHI?
Yeah, it's a direct pass-through.
Okay.
So every month we get
okay.
a huge amount of money that goes directly through us in one day to the owners.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions?
I wish we had 90% fungibility on that amount.
Yeah.
That would be a bonus to the city of Oakland. All right, we have, I think we're at the departments.
So, commissioners, I'm going to give an overview of the leased housing department. The leased housing department has 90 budgeted positions. Currently, we have about 80 positions filled. And the department has five major teams. I'm on slide 25. The customer service team are the individuals you see at the booths when you walk into 1805 and 1619. They manage the phones, incoming phone calls. They process and scan most of the incoming mail, and they assist visitors with LEP requests, reasonable accommodation requests. That team is a group of about 11 staff. The eligibility team manages both the public housing and the housing choice voucher wait list. They process all households who port in and out of Oakland. They also, what's not noted here, is they get referrals for intake for all PVV families. So for our PVV projects, the partner agency forwards the families intake packet, and we process those families as well. So pretty much all eligibility for all applicants that are seeking assistance from us. Additionally, the occupancy team, you can think of that team as families who are already housed, and they perform annual, biennial, and interim recertifications for all HCV households, and that's any income changes, household changes. If families want to move within Oakland, they issue the transfer voucher. They work with families in terms of program compliance for their family obligations. Families are required to uphold particular and very specific family obligations, and they work with families in partnership with FCP to assist families with being in compliance with the program. They also recommend program terminations and calculate over-subsidy payments. And our staff work closely with OHAPD and the chief's team in terms of researching program possible terminations or proposed terminations. They also, the chief assists us and his team with the over-subsidy process. Once we calculate the over-subsidy, the families refer to OHAPD, who meet with them and get the agreement signed. The owner services team are all things for owners. They work with our Sterling contractor for scheduling all inspections, whether that's annual, callback, special inspections, move-in inspections is what this team is required to process. They process all rent increase requests. They execute all of the housing assistance payment contracts, which are required if we're going to pay an owner on the program. They do the rent reasonableness analysis using Go Section 8. And again, they manage the Sterling inspection contract for the authority. The team is comprised of about 20 staff persons. Occupancy has about 20 staff as well. And then Special Programs manages all of our boutique programs, VASH, Shelter Plus Care, Family Reunification. They have all the project-based voucher families, all mod rehab families. They manage and track all the triennial recertifications for seniors with fixed incomes, and they are assigned all OPI households. So they work with the OPI families on recertification, moves very closely with Mark Schifferl and his team. And pretty much that's the department. People are working closely with each other to make sure families are served on a daily basis. So one of the questions Commissioner Castillo had is, Michelle, how are you going to reach those goals we just talked about, right? And so some of the things that we're looking at, as Eric mentioned, is really we see this more as an opportunity. We have a special needs committee that has identified some households that we could move to HCV, some of the Shelter Plus Care TRA families who live in private units, who've been leased for up to 5 years in good standing. We are looking at referring them to HCV. They would go through the regular screening, but they wouldn't have to find a unit. So that's a family that doesn't have to go out and look for a unit in the marketplace. And the Community Development Department with the county is very excited about that. Also, we have a sponsor-based housing program that assists about 120 families. A number of those families are leased and doing well, and they live in private property. Again, the family doesn't need to go search for a unit. So we're looking for opportunities where families are already housed and they don't have to compete in the open market. Now, it will require us to pull some families from the Housing Choice Voucher list. We've already pulled 200 families, and they've actually already come in, and we're doing intake. We will know probably in about 30 days how many of those families will actually be moving forward, because they do get a second appointment letter if they don't make their first appointment. So I will be able to report on that probably in July around the success rate, because the wait list is a 2011 wait list, and we expect 40% of the families to come in for intake.
Great.
Additionally, what we always have the ability to do is to increase the voucher payment standard. And the payment standard is the maximum subsidy we pay on behalf of the family. For the voucher program, we currently are at 95%, and we will be moving to 100% of that. And that'll give the families about $150 more in the marketplace to search for units. We have already increased the voucher payment standard for VASH from 95% to 110% to really try to assist these veterans with finding units. And the Veteran Administration Medical Center, our partner team, is very happy and excited about that.
That's, and I just want to point out, with these two, we are the lagging housing authority in the region in terms of voucher payment standards. What it really does is it expands the number of units that you could pay for under the program, continues to provide our families who are out searching with hopefully the ability to find neighborhoods that they choose and within the affordability range is important, because we don't want to be forced out of certain neighborhoods because they become so unaffordable. But some of our neighbors have gotten waivers from HUD to go to 120%. You can go up to 110% without any special provisions with HUD. Everybody around us is at 110%. Many are at 120%. Several of them have gotten waivers. I was on the phone with someone at the local office today, and she was talking about how they're pursuing blanket waivers for the region because it's become so ridiculous to do them piecemeal. So where we go with that is something that Michelle and I have been talking about with Janet. We're going to actually convene some of our neighboring housing authorities later in early July to discuss approaches, including waiver, how we can combine with waivers from HUD to try and improve some of our successes to let people have an easier time finding apartments and get more landlords to participate.
So because we will be managing towards HAP funds, it's important that as we implement these changes to see what does that do in terms of using up the HAP dollars to get us to 87.5 or 90%. So that's really what we will be managing and looking at in the coming months. I think additionally what we will be doing, we had a great owner appreciation day last month during Affordable Housing Week. Owners really appreciate us educating them, being available for them in terms of the program. And so we're going to do more workshops in the coming year. I think we have one scheduled for September. In fact, the topic we chose in May was rent increases. And we had 140 owners, standing room only, and VASH, and they wanted to know, you know, how do I get a rent increase? So we walked them through that process. The docs are on our website, but we just want them to know we're here for them. We have the best service, I believe, in the Bay Area, and we want to make sure that they're engaged and committed to working with our families.
And we have had an exorbitant number of requests for rent increases. Over 500, I think, are currently pending. So if you hear something out there that someone, tell them to be a little patient. Shell's crew's working as fast as they can, but they're coming in quickly, more rapidly than we can process them, but we will get to them.
Again, partnerships with housing search agencies. We have fairly good relationships with Eden Information and Referral. In fact, they partnered with us in Affordable Housing Week. Additionally, the City of Oakland Housing Search Housing Assistance Center staff are very familiar with us, and we also can assist with security deposit assistance with the county. So really just making sure that we're clear about who our partners are, that we're willing to work with them, and that we really have all of the resources for our families available.
And it was a great event. I want to thank Michelle and her staff, and also Tila Carpenter, who I don't think is here tonight, but did a wonderful job with the owners. And I was so surprised we had so many turned out. I was really thinking nobody cares anymore. Our landlords are going to move on because they don't need us and they aren't going to show up. And they did show up. And I think they were really receptive. We did one presentation that I did on the Workforce Investment Board, getting some feedback for the city. They were excited about that. And we did VASH. We pushed VASH for a big segment, and they were very, very, I think, enthusiastic about being able to help our veterans, and also, I think, very happy that we'd gone to 110% of for the voucher payment standard.
Director, how effective is the Go Section 8 website?
So Go Section 8 is as good as the comparables that we get, right? So it is driven by participation by private landlords. What I can tell you, last month, Go Section 8 came here and did a presentation for us, and they're actually improving their software and their service. And we're a pilot agency to actually have the benefit of that new software. It's definitely easier for the families to maneuver. More interactive with the landlords. So we're one of the housing authorities that will be using their new software just to see and get feedback. Certainly in a market like this, you know, you will note that in the lobby we used to have 4, 5, 6, 7 pages of affordable units, and it's down to maybe 2 pages. So that requires us to really do more outreach and help owners understand why there are benefits to using and going into contract with us and serving low-income families. So I think the workshops will help with that. Families use all kinds of word of mouth. We have families that sit in the lobby waiting for owners to walk in. And we have owners who wait outside waiting for tenants to walk in. So we're open to, you know, we can't find the units for them, so we give them some caveats around using Craigslist, you know, making sure that they're not giving money up very easily for units that are not going to be available to them. The City of Oakland Housing Assistance Center, we've partnered with them, and they do some great resource outreach for families. So I think if everybody in the community comes together and talks about the value of affordable housing, I think we will get through this, but it will take time because the market is Oakland is the place to be now.
Right.
I don't know if you've ever come down here on the weekend,
yeah,
on a Saturday around.
First
oh my
Friday.
God!
Oh.
You would think they were giving stuff away free at Lake Merritt, right? I mean, there are hundreds of people that are down here, and it's vibrant, and people want to be in Oakland. So our families are competing with open market tenants now.
Yes. Have you been to the Alameda County Housing Choice web? It has like this website where they actually, it looks like there's landlords who are putting in information.
Oh, okay. Okay.
It's called Housing Choices. That's the one I use more than Go Section.
Okay.
So well, I'm so excited about the new revision.
Okay.
So one of the things that shows the board years ago, we made a real commitment to project-based sectionating, creating units. And that's just, you know, it's, if we had not done that then, the position we would be in now would even be worse. And the last time we talked about our project-based limit, because we can set our own in Oakland, because of MTW, we sort of benchmarked like 30%, 33%, about a third of our vouchers. We'll be there soon. And yes. I never thought I would. I'm going to probably come back and say we should go to about 50% in our region, because I'm terrified that the Section 8 program is going to become obsolete in the Bay Area unless we can create an enormous number of units very quickly. I'm not convinced that's going to happen regionally, because we're not an island. We exist in a market that is so regionalized and so opposed to growth that they're not building units for the hundreds of thousands of people who are moving here every year. So it's just a question of how we can preserve not only affordability but also provide the service under the Section 8 program. One of the biggest pushbacks we made, which I'll talk later in the meeting, to the senators in California in support of MPW, is this affordable housing crisis. We have to create units. Yeah. It's not enough to rely on the private market anymore.
Right.
No. Yeah. Any other questions?
Yes. Yes.
This question is, Michelle, I think you told us this once before, but how long does it take a family, what's the minimum time for a family to find a unit? And if in this market, driven by, especially in California, and with the rents being so high, do they get an extension or what? Give me just, you know, how long does it take?
Excellent question, Commissioner Montgomery. So we are finding that initially we issue vouchers for 120 days, initial search time. I could say that probably 70% of those families come back to us for at least one extension, up to 180 days. I have families who have disabled members that I am giving extensions. They've had their voucher for almost a year searching. So we understand the difficulties in the market, and we're being flexible, especially if we have a disabled family member, a head of household, a senior. Families with a lot of children are having a hard time finding units. So, you know, we're trying to be flexible. As long as we have the family's request in writing, that we've reviewed the challenges, they show us that they're being serious in their search, we are providing extensions for the vouchers.
Okay, so the initial search
is 120 days.
120.
Yes, ma'am.
And then the extension is?
Then we can go the manager. So let's say if those teams that I showed you, occupancy, special programs, eligibility, they can do an extension up to an additional 30. And then anything over that comes to me for review.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
And then we're logging all of them. So we're just really trying to keep data to show who, you know, how many families are we getting a month. I would say we were probably looking about 30 families a month who are asking for extensions on their vouchers.
Okay.
And never before have we seen that.
And that's including people that are porting in to that are
yes,
looking,
ma'am.
Right?
Yes, mm-hmm. Okay. But now the difference in the port, because we're absorbing, we're more flexible. But if we were not absorbing, families would have to go back to their initial housing authority once that time is up.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay, I just have two questions, and thank you, Michelle. Of the 500 requests for an increase, how many do we actually approve? What's that process?
It's interesting. Let me just see. I can look in the monthly report and see what we are approving. I think it's about, so we had 223 requests, and these they kind of keep rolling. We probably approve 70% of them.
Okay.
If they're not approved, they're usually because the owner didn't complete the notice properly to the tenant. They have to give them a 60-day notice. Okay. They also have to provide us with their rent roll, as well as fill out the rent increase documentation. So usually there's something missing in that information. Additionally, if the family, the unit has not passed a HQS inspection, we actually will go out and inspect the unit before we provide the rent increase. So there's a number of factors that we look at when we're approving the rent increase. But I would say probably 70% of them we actually do. We do increase.
And the other 30 could be that, but it also could be some questions about the relatable comps that they that the owners provided that we don't agree with.
Right.
Okay, my second question, last question actually. Oh, wow. We pulled 200 families off the 2011 wait list.
Yes.
And you said they'll know in 30 days if we can help them.
Well, what I was thinking is that at the point where they're done with their intake, which would be this month, we will issue them a voucher, and we'll get a sense of their success.
Okay.
So we would be able to report back of those 200, how many were issued vouchers, how many did not show up, and how many had to be rescheduled for another intake appointment. So I think we would have data in July regarding those families, which will, you know, give us a snapshot of what to expect in the future with anyone off that 2011 wait list.
Oh, thank you for doing that. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Any other questions, commissioners? Okay, ladies, thank you. Oh, yeah, go ahead, Commissioner.
One quick question. Any chance of getting new landlords at this time of
Well, yes, I would stay positive about that. We just went to EBRA, which is the East Bay Rental Housing Association, and did a presentation. We had a room of 30 owners there who wanted to learn about the program. So we're taking our show on the road to organizations who have owners so they can learn about the program. We can get rid of any of the myths about the program. People have myths about Section 8 that just aren't true. And we pay our owners, Tracy Teams pays our owners on time every month. And there's nothing like getting your HAP regularly. We answer questions. We try to be available for them. So as we educate owners and start our workshops, that we will get more owners on the program.
We are also talking about owner retention. What can we do to make sure we incentivize our owners to rent to or to continue to rent to mm-hmm. Section 8 families, particularly if one Section 8 family decides to move or something happens? Can we keep that unit basically in the program? And we have some ideas. I'm not going to say them right now, but we're kicking those around and what we can do that would really, I think, help support our owners in a meaningful way and not just lip service, and try and preserve the units that are currently on the program regardless of whether they become vacant, encourage them to release to another Section 8 tenant.
I mean, one of the other benefits that will be happening in the coming months is an owner portal on our website for owners. So they won't have to walk in here every day and try to figure out information. They can actually go on the website and log in with their secure password and see, when's my next inspection? Did my HAP check go out? How much was it? So they'll have more access to their own information, and I think that will be a benefit as well. So okay. With Yardi Week comes that benefit, so we're looking forward to that.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions?
So we have a couple of other presentations from departments. They're pretty short, but I wanted to give them an opportunity. Come on up, Mark. Just to give you an overview, just to educate people, the structure and a couple of things. One is property management and then family and community partnerships. So I know we've gone long, but if you'll endure a couple of more minutes, I think it's educational and really important. Mark Schifferl is our director of property management, and he's here just to talk about that operation because it's very complicated.
Thank you.
Good evening, Commissioners. Mark Schifferl, director of property management. I'm here to talk to you a little bit about our department and what we do. As you see from the slide, we are anchored on both ends of the city, Lockwood Gardens in the east, Peralta Village in the west with our public housing sites, and then scattered throughout the city in our Oakland Affordable Housing Preservation Initiatives portfolio, there's 1,554 units in all different districts of the city. For our roles, what we do in our department, we're responsible for leasing. So what we do, once the residents are chosen from the wait list and referred to us from Michelle, they've passed their eligibility process, we show them units. If they choose to rent those units from us, we execute leases with them and bring them into our portfolios. We manage curb appeal at each of our sites. Next step in the process, we monitor and collect rent from all the residents on a monthly basis. And then in our maintenance department supports them as they live in our units and move out. We also prepare our units for occupancy. That could entail remodeling units that could be small scale, which my department may handle in-house with our staff, or we may work in partnership with our capital improvements department and William Bailey's team and have them do a larger scale rehab, which actually have a photo of some transformations coming up. We have annual inspections. We do our own in-house to ensure that our units are kept up by the residents and that we're maintaining and doing work orders in their units. We may also have, in our OPI portfolio, the HQS inspections, the housing quality standards, which Michelle's team does to ensure that we are being a good landlord and maintaining our units. And then we perform all the work orders that are called in, whether they're emergencies. We try to get those completed within 24 hours or the regular work orders for anyone that calls anything in on a daily basis. We have monthly and annual reporting that we generate every month. We have 50058s, which is part of the recertification process that we send into HUD. We generate this report here for the board on a monthly basis, reporting how we're proceeding every month with operations. And then we have our annual recertifications that we perform at our public housing sites within my department. The OPI sites for the residents that have project-based vouchers are through Michelle's department. So we work in partnership with them to make sure that we have the right rental amounts that we're charging. Lease enforcement, so we have enforcement and compliance. We hold residents accountable for what they've signed up for within the programs and to maintain the sites and their units in a good manner. We have unlawful detainers that are, we work with our legal department, our legal team, on processing. It's always a last resort. We do always try to house our residents as long as we can. And then we have a site intervention team that works with residents that have resident disputes or need referrals or assistance that could not be also referred out to our family community partnerships team, which we work with Lenita Ellis and her team. And we also seek the assistance for lease enforcement with our Oakland Housing Authority Police Department. Chief Duplessis and his team are always a great resource for us as well, and also for residents. Community wellness, FCP outreach programs, and community events. The community events that we work with in our department, we help with the block parties that are at Lockwood Gardens in Peralta. And then also National Night Out is a big one for us. We try to encourage our residents to either host or be a part of something within their neighborhoods so they can be included. This will show you how what William Bailey's team does with one of our sites for a transformation. This is an example of 2558 35th Avenue, the before picture from what it was to what they transformed it into. And it, if you have not seen the site, it is absolutely a delight. We are almost full. We have one more vacant unit, but the residents who have all been shown units at this property immediately rented them. Rented them. I hope not. The next slide, you'll find the interiors. I just wanted to show you the interior of a unit for a before, kind of old and tired unit to what then Mr. Bailey's team
And that's
team
just
does.
A particularly nice looking before, yeah. I just want to say. that has not been my experience in most of the units. The before picture, I think, looks really good, doesn't it?
They aren't always that nice. But the after effect for what our residents, what we're putting into the units for long term is phenomenal, and William's team does a great job. And then I wanted to talk to you about our goals, what we have for public housing, is to achieve and maintain our adjusted vacancy rate at around 2%, improve our adjusted rent collection to maintain at 95% or better, which we're really looking forward to the YARDI program assisting us in maintaining and monitoring that. For our contract management, our OPI sites, achieve and maintain adjusted vacancy rate at around 8%. Complete unit turns within 30 days in-house. So those are the units that we're working on within our department. The site renovation and unit renovations take a little bit longer than that. And the department-wide, we still want to strive to address emergency maintenance requests within 24 hours and the non-emergency requests within 30 days to make sure that the residents and the units are being maintained. And expanding our training opportunities through the residential housing module of the YARDI business system, which is new for my team. The previous program, FAMS, did not do much of what YARDI does, so it's a new adventure for them. And then an exciting new thing that the Housing Authority is putting together for OHA University and educating them about not only the Housing Authority, but cross-training and different discussion points.
OHA. I'll tell you more on staffing. I'm interested.
Sorry, I kind of broached it to maybe that.
I wasn't going to talk about it, but I will. That's great.
So any questions for me on what we do? I tried to.
So you've seen both our key income-generating source departments, and I want to tell you that I'm grateful to have both the leadership of Mark in property management and Michelle in leased housing, because they're really, this is where, as they always say, that awful phrase, rubber hits the road. This is where we live and breathe on these two departments.
Yeah.
If we're going to be a success, if we're going to do what our goals and missions drive us to be, yeah, it's on the success and backs of Michelle and Mark, and they're both doing excellent jobs at making real progress and really innovating in both practical ways and innovative ways that you don't think of to make both those departments work well. And I really, particularly property management, which is such a challenge when it's spread out throughout the city. I think Mark's done a great job at turning that around and really focusing it on the quality and the numbers. So I want to thank Mark. So now we get to the MTW funded departments. These are the ones that are not necessarily income generating, and there's basically three. It's family and community partnerships, our police department, and real estate development. And they all operate off that 15% fungibility we were talking about earlier. We will have to fit the box. And we have a few slides, and I think Lenita Wheeler is going to be up at the mic to go over a few slides on family and community partnerships.
Good evening, commissioners. I am Lenita Wheeler, Director of Family and Community Partnerships. Just confirming that what I have is actually what you're seeing on the screen. A few things about our department. You can see there the way that we're divided up. I do want to have some good news for you that we actually had a closing last week, and so that number for homeownership is now 103. Even in this very challenging homeownership market, we were able to have one of our residents purchase, close escrow. The homeownership program actually is in family and community partnerships up until an individual receives their keys, and then it moves over to the leased housing department. I believe you saw on Michelle's slide that she also mentioned the homeownership department within the special programs in her shop. We will do the resident education and work with the lenders and the realtors and the title companies and support our residents through that very difficult process and support them. And then we also will partner with leased housing as they will do the calculations, which help the banks and the lenders identify what type of loan and how much of a loan our families can qualify for. And that's part of our economic and employment development division of the Family and Community Partnerships Department. Many of our residents will save through our family self-sufficiency program when they're trying to become homeowners. It's a program designed, it's employment-based, and it helps individuals with a forced savings. And so we work with them to increase their income, and as their income increases, so does the amount in rent that they pay. But the difference in rent they paid when they started the program and as they go through the program, the housing authority puts aside in a special escrow savings for them. And at the end of 5 years, once they've accomplished some goals and have graduated, that savings we issue to them in a check. Many use that for the homeownership program, as I stated, but some will go on to start a business or use for school or children's savings or some other things. On average, our families will receive a check for $8,000 or $9,000, but I've signed packets this year as even for as much as $50,000. So our families work really, really hard with our coordinators and our community partners to earn that additional income and to really turn their lives around. It's a program that we're very, very proud of. We also have our education initiative, as you see there, which has our five focus areas: increasing parent engagement, reducing chronic absenteeism, getting our kids to school on time, our summer enrichment programs, civic engagement and leadership, RAB, resident volunteerism, special programs. Michelle already mentioned sponsored base HAP and the special needs, and then, of course, our program administrations. Some goals that we're looking forward to for the year coming up is, of course, we are looking to have significant impact on our families, meeting the broad-based needs, building on best practices in the field. We do that by offering all of our families service plans, connecting them with a coordinator, and not only serving the head of the household, but by serving the entire family. And that's something that we believe is important if the entire family is going to achieve their goals and achieve self-sufficiency.
Thank you, Lanita. You know, one of the things I wanted to point out about family and community partnerships, one is the work that they do is mostly in collaboration. Mm-hmm. And we get an enormous bang for the buck considering what they're able to accomplish and what you read in the reports. And it's grateful for the small staff that we have been able to fund in family and community partnerships. And I want to thank all of them and Lanita for leading the charge.
Thank you.
Because it's not an easy task.
Right.
With a very handful of people, they have a very big impact on our families.
Yes.
And they do that principally through collaboration. And that can be kind of the most time-consuming and hardest work. But I'm grateful for their work. And I wanted just to point out, if you look at the big budget roll-up, you know, you can see by department, including family community partnerships, and you say 4.1 is basically how much money they're getting income for to operate. But really, only half of that is staff. The rest of it are direct services for residents. And I think that's a pretty terrific bargain for the price, considering the size of our program. Thank you, Lanita. I don't think we have any slides for the other two, because you hear about them often and understand how they work, but also very, very important. And then we do have one more slide, I think, of the org chart. So in terms of the staffing, before we get to that, if you do have your large table, I like to always point this out at the budget because I've done it. If you go down to the very last page, the totals column, which is doesn't have a letter in front of it, but if you look at the totals, I just would kind of like to walk through that, the bottom of that. So we have Our total revenue at $751,663,000. We have expenses at $750,930,000. And that's showing a deficit of $267,000. And I would tell you this year we were very tight in our budgeting in terms of being accurate. That if people had not spent money or we had positions that were not being slated to be hired, we did not put a full amount of funding behind them. Because we need to be accurate. We need to make sure we can expend the 85% threshold. I don't want to get us into a period where we have over-budgeted certain areas in the department. So we were very realistic in pulling that back. So that looks a little bit different than past years. Then what we've done is take $21 million, which are transferring out of reserves, which are actually carryovers really from this year, and some additional money to do the capital improvements. And if you look at the majority, and you can see how it spreads across the different departments, in terms of expenditures, but the majority of that is just balancing out the cost of unit improvements that we're doing and balancing out some others, but those are things that are carry forwards by and large. So it shows at the end that we're a $21 million deficit, but it's not really a deficit that is an operational deficit. It's things that we've chosen to carry forward, like purchase of vehicles, unit rehabilitation in OPI, and that we fund out of our past reserves. So that's traditionally the way we do it. I like to kind of walk through that bottom. What we are showing is that we're in a $276,000 operational deficit that we're covering out of reserves. That is actually a really remarkably small amount of money for a budget that is $751 million. So it's a tight budget, is I guess what I'm trying to explain. I would also point out in terms of staffing, which we're getting to next, we did include the 3% COLA that we are considering in the next item. So that's been factored into the figures you see. So that will not change the bottom line of the agency when those additional expenses hit the books. And in terms of overall staffing, we have currently 372 full-time equivalents FTEs, and we're losing one position. We're going to go down to 371, and we're actually losing one position that we no longer need. It's a classification called a buyer. We no longer use a buyer. We have already met with that employee, and they have another place in the agency. But we don't need that classification anymore the way we do business. And we've held on to it for a couple of years, and this year we've just decided we can't have her working out a classification, so we've taken care of that. The other thing I just want to show you, the org chart. So we have our general org chart here, which is basically a high-level leadership org chart. And as you know, we're going to have some leadership changes in our agency over the next year. So this will change, and we do have some plans in place and a fairly good idea of how we're going to change over time. It will, and I will give you updates as the year progresses. We have finished, we are finishing the recruitment for the chief operating officer. We haven't made a selection yet. We originally recruited for that in January of this year. If you'll recall, it's been in the budget since at least 2012. And with sequestration and other things, I did not move forward with it because we just didn't have the funding. We had frozen hiring. I wasn't going to hire that position until we were in a better place. Okay. But we did open it up in January. We have reviewed and screened the list. We finished the interviews. We're now down to a list of two candidates we're considering. So hopefully by either June or July, I'll be able to let you know if we've been successful at negotiating someone coming on board. And they're both very well-qualified people. And once that happens, there'll be gradual shifts of departments and a little organizational change with the agency. But it will all carry on, and we will make it work. So that, I think, concludes our report. And we're here for any questions with the budget. And I want to thank particularly the finance staff, Janet and Tracy, a terrific job at making all this work this year. Caroline Barnett, who's in the back. Where is she? Raise your hand, Caroline. She's our budget analyst, and she has to get me in all the meetings and try and schedule them. That alone is a heroic thing, I have to tell you. But I want to call that out. Also, Mohammed, who does our operating subsidy calculations, I know he's not here tonight. I'm very grateful for him doing. Jonathan helping with capital improvements and helping William Bailey and Mark Schiffel get that area all pulled together. Okay. And just his guidance and work. Raise your hand, Jonathan, so they can see your face. Thank you. We couldn't do it without their support and their help, and they do a terrific job. And this year was particularly challenging because we are budgeting to a moving target. And we didn't really get our mind around it until after we got Yardi going live. And then we had to very quickly readjust to the moving target and make some changes. And that was a lot for finance to handle, a lot for Tracy to handle, and they've all done really a wonderful job. So congratulations.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. It's an incredible presentation. I just appreciate everyone's really walking us through it at such a basic level that we can understand, and I so appreciate that. And I do love to look at the variance between 2015 and 2016, and I understand that a lot of it is okay, I won't answer that. But I think we had a budget committee that met and discussed these things, correct? So I'd love to hear from them and, you know, how it went. And then I have one question under tenant services, and then that's it.
Okay. Yeah. If any of you want to report out, Commissioner Griggs Murphy is not here tonight, so she was the other third member.
I have to confess I'm still learning this budget, but I appreciate the thorough explanation for a pretty complicated organization. Thank you. And great job in all your and how you're progressing towards all of your goals. Thank you.
So, yeah. I think we did a marathon about 3 hours. But yeah, it was good education, good learning to see where we're moving. And so I think that by the end of the fiscal year, which is, we should have more information and be able to report out. And I look forward to a retreat and to another budget meeting so that we can stay informed about what's going on. But I think we're doing an excellent job.
Thank you. And we do plan on having a retreat. I've been in conversations with the chair. The Budget Committee did its usual review of where we were in terms of our safe harbor and reserves, and we have that analysis, and we're waiting for some final contracts so we know what HUD's doing with the MTW contract. At least we have a pretty solid picture, but I would expect it between now and the fall to have, we'll be putting out some dates, and we intend to do the same thing that we did, if you remember, 5 years ago, where we have our day retreat. Part of the retreat will be mapping out a roadmap that can create housing and how we're going to utilize those funds and what we have to hold in reserve. So we did the same thing you've done in the past years, Commissioner, with the budget.
Great. And thank you, Commissioners, for sitting through such a long meeting. I just, then the only question I will raise is on page 3 under tenant services. It seems that, if I'm reading this correctly, that we're putting a lot less money into our resident participation, special events, recreation, you know, those kind of things that is probably under community family partnership. Am I making that connection correctly? And I just wanted to know, you know, what was kind of going on there. Children and youth programs. And so I was just curious about that.
First, which one are we looking at? Are you looking at the variance report or
yes.
the table?
And that's the only question, I promise.
It's rather challenging because without the detail of the other columns and the big one, it's hard for us to tell where that's driving. But the majority, I think, would be unexpended funds and things that we had booked this year that we did not expend, so we cut it to realistic levels.
Oh, okay.
So if we had contract services that were not being used or that we didn't, we'd budget for it and not planned, they were cut. I don't remember those from looking at this. It's hard for me to answer. But what I can do is get, Lydia can look at this with Janet tomorrow and we'll tell you exactly where they hit when we can roll it out.
Because it's significant differences, like $134,000 mm-hmm. for children and youth programs. I'm curious to see why that dropped so much. Mm-hmm. And so it would be wonderful if my commissioners to agree to just kind of at least look at that piece, if I could.
Yeah, we can get you. We can get you a follow-up report on those cuts and what they really were.
I
and
really if
they
appreciate
were,
it.
And
Director.
If they were really in the department that we think they were.
Exactly, and I know that we.
Commissioner, I would point out though, if you look at the bottom line though, it really only dropped by about 80,000. So some of it is just a reclassification into some line items. Some of the lines went up and some went down. So ultimately, the tenant service section only had a drop in budget of about 80,000 from last year.
And tenant services, though, can appear in multiple budgets, as you know. They can be at the AMP level, they can be in family community partnerships, they can be in asset management and even leased housing. So we'd have to look at the whole picture and get you a real report on what the cuts were and if there were any in terms of and what they were in family community partnerships worth. Some of them could be at site levels, they just were funds that they weren't expending, and so we made adjustments.
So Do I understand you to say that this funding is not connected to the Family Community Partnership?
I don't know.
Okay.
It may or may not be. It's a roll-up of all those other departments.
Thank you, Chief. I have a question. I'm trying to understand the so the admin fees, you talked about how we separated them out and how HUD has a $15 million mm-hmm. allocation or something like that. And I was trying to find that in the budget. And I think it's captured under line item 760-21, the admin fee earned. But we're
yes.
showing $38 million. So what's, why is that so divergent?
So what that is the embedded fee is what HUD says automatically you can spend on admin. And then the rest is considered the housing choice voucher money. So the new utilization argument is that out if you meet those utilization targets, then you can use an additional amount of up to 15%, or if it's the 90%, you can use another 10% of the housing choice voucher piece. So what we did was we first separated out the $15 million of the embedded fee that you automatically are allowed to use. And then we calculated using the number of 87.5%. So that would have left another 12.5% that we can use towards administration. So it's the 15 plus 12% of the $196 million.
Okay. So, but that still puts us substantially over what HUD is wanting to see or something like, or am I
No, that's what we're calculating.
It's
allow.
The way we budgeted the fungibility.
Okay.
That when we talk about the 15% or 10% fungibility, right. It's the way we budget. We included that and the unembedded admin fee. So one line, what you're asking is the $15 million worth of admin fee. But what you did was take the 15 put admin fee plus the 10% fungibility out of HAP. So if you look, go back to the chart that I did with the arrows.
Okay.
It makes more sense.
No, I get it. I'm just trying to see if we have any exposure about being so much over the $15 million, but it looks like for our expenses, we're really only at
$16 and it's important
million.
We all understand. That's why I really want to, if I can, 2 seconds, I'll explain it. So if you have, if we're getting, see where it says admin fees $15 million? Mm-hmm. So then we end up with a net budget authority of 169, but we only have to, but we're only going to budget under the HAP program 87.5. Which is 171, so there's a difference. So we're budgeting that difference as well in that column. So we're budgeting both the 15% and the difference between 976 and 171, okay?
So what HUD considers administrative is also what we consider fungible funds. So the monies we spend on the police department, family community partnerships, although in our mind they're not administrative expenses, HUD considers them administrative in that they're not HAP expenses. So we're allowed to use that difference, the 12.5% towards those. And so we just put them in the administrative column to show they weren't HAP expense.
Yeah. Right. So what we're trying to do is not book them against the 171 so we know what we're managing against with HAP, and the other funds are going in that other column because we have to book the income somewhere. And it's Section 8 income in excess of the 15. Okay? So
Thank
it's
you.
Staying within the percentage. And it's that extra fungibility they give us for being MTW.
Right. I get it.
Okay.
Thank you.
No, it's confusing. Believe me. I hope I'm explaining it correctly because it's your mind goes round and round and HUD had changed the target several times. So, and how they're applying the rules. And so we have made adjustments. And what we're trying to do is manage the HAP expense to 171. Then and that's the money we have to spend on HAP or HAP-like. All the rest of the money, including admin fees, is being put into the column that you're pointing to. So that's what we have to have left over to run Section 8 and our other MTW programs.
Okay.
So how do we get to determine if we use option 1 or option 2, though?
I think
that's the piece I'm missing. And so if they decide we have to use option 1, what's our exposure with the budgeting there? That's my real question.
That's a hard and good question. If we have to use the 90% threshold, we will try and budget our HAP expense goal around 92, which will mean that we will have reductions in family community partnerships, in police services, and in our admin. And those will all not be easy.
So this is the best case budget for us getting to do what we want to do within the parameters they've kind of
out of the two options they currently have on the table.
Right.
We are budgeting toward an option 2 where we have more fungibility. The change is going to get a little interesting, though. We didn't run 1 because we really need 2. So in order not to have to shrink our police services and our family and community partnerships, we need that extra 5%. But if we lose that and we get 90, what we also can put back into the HAP expenses are our development costs, including Phil and his shop. Okay. So there's a little trade-off, but not enough for us to survive. So we've landed on option two is best for OHA at this point, if we have to choose an option. HUD currently is not providing that we are going to be able to choose an option and that there will be one chosen of these two. We are proposing that neither of these work, and that we want to be a 90% threshold of family utilized, family served, and they should walk away from us after that, just like the original proposal. And or, if that doesn't work, our scenario back to HUD is that you should give us an option of which one works best for the agency.
Okay. Thank you. That answers my question.
This budget also is just anticipating the MTW agreement, so HUD is not going to hold us to this if we don't, if they change it to 90, because it's not going to happen for fiscal 16. We're just gearing ourselves to budget that way for when they do enact it.
We're starting, because it takes so long. I mean, it would be the worst thing we could do is wait until 2017 and try and figure out what in the world we've got to do by 2018.
Okay, I just have one final compliment and question. In looking at the budget, I talked to the director, and I'm really pleased with the way you did it. And I really like the icons that you use, the diagrams, flowcharts. That was great. One thing I particularly appreciated is HUD chart of accounts. Mm-hmm. I really like seeing how you circled them. I was able to focus right on those areas. Thank you very much. And my final question, on page 14, and this may be something to add to what Commissioner Castillo asked, on page 14, under the fraud recovery, $400,000, I think that may be a chief question, $400,000 in the HUD charting of our accounts. Does HUD question that?
No, they don't, actually, and that's the portion that we keep.
Okay.
No, that is correct.
It's Chief Duplessis from
the Chief Duplessis, Housing Authority Police. That is what we budget, $400,000 we try to collect each year. I believe our actual collections for fraud recovery for last year was roughly around $330,000, $350,000 that we're trying to recoup. That doesn't take into account also repayment agreements. I believe last year we did recover around $335,000, and we also signed around $750,000 in repayment agreements that we're actively collecting on each month. But no, it's actually HUD actually encourages us to make sure that we have integrity in our program and make sure that the right people are housed and nobody is violating the program.
Okay. All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, that's it for me. I think we need to approve it. So I'll entertain a motion.
I so move to approve the budget for 2016.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay, all in favor?
All in favor.
Aye.
Aye.
And that motion carries. Thank you, commissioners.
Great, thank you, commissioners. And thank you for everyone who worked on the budget. I appreciate it. Moving on. We're on item B, consideration of a resolution approving a 3% cost of living adjustment for the Building and Construction Trades Council of Alameda County, effective May 1st, 2015. I'm pleased to present that we have come to agreement with Building and Construction Trades on the reopener on COLA for COLA and for healthcare only. We are currently under negotiations with our group, and we have reached a tentative agreement. The Building and Construction Trades Council has voted on it and ratified our proposal for a 3% cost of living. And we are here for any questions.
Any questions on this item? Okay. Entertain a motion.
Let's motion it.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries. Thank you, commissioners.
Thank you, Commissioners. Moving on to item C is a consideration of a resolution approving a 3% cost of living adjustment for the Housing Authority not subject to the Memorandum of Understanding, including executive and senior management, middle management, senior professional service, professional confidential, and supervisory job groups, also effective May 1st, 2015. This corresponds to the previous item. And we're here for any questions.
I'll motion that one.
Second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Thank you, Commissioners.
Thank you, Commissioners. The next item is the consent agenda. We have a request on the table to pull items 2 and 3.
I'll move the remaining items.
Yes, I'll second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Motion carries. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Commissioners. And the next item on the desk is consent item number 2. That's a resolution approving the conditional award of 11 Section 8 project-based vouchers to Redwood Hill Townhomes, a project selected to receive affordable housing funding from the City of Oakland. And I believe Gretchen Heckman is in the audience. And I don't know if you'd like to come up and walk us through the package and the proposal. They have received the documents that you've written, and I think would just like to talk to you about the project.
We also have the City of Oakland, Christina Morales, here as well.
Good evening, Commissioners.
And you can actually use the podium mic. I think it should be on.
Good evening, Commissioners. My name is Gretchen Heckman. I'm a project manager at Satellite Affordable Housing Associates, also known as SAHA. And I'm happy to tell you about our new planned development in the Lower Hills of South Oakland. Redwood Hill Townhomes will be a 28-unit project located on Calaveras Avenue in the Redwood Heights neighborhood, which is located east of the 580 freeway. This site is in a low-poverty, low-crime area, which we believe fits in very well with our target demographic of large, low-income families and victims of domestic violence and their families. As I mentioned, Redwood is a family site with 12 two-bedrooms and 16 three-bedroom units planned, the size of which are all well above the TCAC, Tax Credit Allocation Committee minimum requirements. And these spacious units are an amenity that we are very excited and proud to be able to present to our low-income family partners. We're also excited to help, albeit in a very small way, to fill the very large demand for large affordable rental units in Oakland. 11 of our units will be set aside for victims of domestic violence and their families. Perhaps a little known fact, but per our services provider, Building Futures with Women and Children, a service provider who has served domestic violence victims in Alameda County for 26 years. Domestic violence is the number one cause of homelessness for women and children in Alameda County. We feel that this is an underserved and an overlooked population, and we are determined to assist them and meet their needs at Redwood Hill Townhomes. Lastly, we expect to be ready to start construction in February of 2016, so these vouchers will be put into use very soon. Thank you for your time, and I'm happy to answer any questions you might have at this point.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming, and I know that it's been a long meeting, so I appreciate you waiting. I'm glad that this project is for families and that you're supporting a particular population that is near and dear to all of us. There's 11 that are going to folks who are suffering from domestic violence.
Correct.
Can you tell me about the other units, which is, 14 or something? Who will you be serving there?
They will be serving low-income families that range from 30% to 50% of the area median income.
And can you tell me about how you're going to outreach to those families?
We, for every project that we have, we have a focused outreach plan that reaches out to community groups within the specific neighborhood and within Oakland as a larger city. And for the domestic violence units, we will be working with our service provider, Building Futures, to source those families.
Can you also tell me about, it looks like you're going to have computers there and a space for computers. And it looks like your units are also, they're going to be Cat5'd. Is that correct?
Correct.
But you're not going to provide internet service for your families?
We will be providing internet service.
Okay,
for
good.
Each unit, and then we will also have, I believe it's 3 computers in our community building on site.
Oh, that's really good. Thank you very much for that. Okay, thank you.
Okay, any other questions?
Yes, hello. I noticed in the memo that the site is being built on top of a former gas station. Just wanting to make sure that all testing has been done, all that. It says it's been cleared for regulatory. Just want a little more background in that. That's potentially problematic for building.
Yes, we've run a phase 1 on the property and also removed an underground storage tank. The phase 1, we subsequently did a phase 2, and that called for a small amount of remediation of lead-contaminated soil, so it seemed like something that was not related to the site's prior uses, and that we will be taking care of before we receive our building permit.
And you have contingency in your budget to deal with?
Yes.
Anything that may happen in that realm?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
I have a, I live in the neighborhood, so I'm very happy to see that you're developing this long vacant site. I am aware that it's pretty close to 580, mm-hmm. So I'm just wondering what you're doing in terms of acoustics and dealing with any pollutants that can come from the freeway.
Sure. As part of our process to obtain a building permit, we go through various technical studies, acoustical and a health risk assessment that determines air quality risks for the future tenants that will be on our site. And I can say for the acoustical component, we work with our architect team to specify different materials of windows and doors and walls that can help shield the noise that may come off the freeway. And we also work with our architect team to design ventilation systems to ensure that the indoor air quality is high and that there is a filtration system from the exterior to the interior of the units.
Any other questions? Okay, I just have one question and some comments. On page 2, at the very bottom, it says that the award would be conditioned upon the project securing adequate financing and contractual agreement to fund these PVVs. Do you anticipate a problem there?
No. We are at our final stage of our funding, obtainment process. We will be submitting for 9% tax credits, and we expect to be competitive in round 2 this year.
Okay. And then my comments. One, I like the project, and I particularly appreciate the way you outline everything. Neighborhood impact, very important to me as a commissioner. Resident safety, very important to me as a commissioner. And also the benefits to the community, very important to me as a resident and commissioner. And also the cost attainment. And I think you talked about the education and transportation. I really love seeing that. And you got my alma mater in there, Mills College. So that's great.
Excellent.
And a lot of the schools loved it. So thank you for laying it out this great way for us. Thank you. Thank you. Are there any other questions, commissioners?
I'll move the item.
Okay, is there a second?
I second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. Thank you.
Thank you, commissioners. The next item is consent item number 3. And consent item number 3 is a resolution authorizing the conditional award of 10 Section 8 project-based vouchers to 3706 San Pablo Avenue, a project selected to receive affordable housing development funding from the City of Oakland. There is one note that I want to make is that the back side of the resolution that was included in the packet was for the wrong property. It was the one we just considered, and we provided you with the updated one, which is continues awarding 10 as it was noticed and included in the agenda. So we provided the correct one. So when we approve it, it will be the 10 vouchers for the San Pablo project. And I'm sorry for that oversight. So the San Pablo project is a partner, is a project developed by EAH, and I think Felix, do you want to come up? Felix Anyung is here to talk about the project, and maybe you can give us just a brief overview of what EAH is considering with the project, some of the things you included. They've got all the attachments and the letter that you wrote to us.
Okay. Hi, good evening. My name is Felix Anyung. I'm the Senior Manager for Business Development at EAH Housing. We've, of course, recently had the successful occupancy and grand opening at Cathedral Garden, and thank you very much to the Housing Authority for your support for that project. I'm pleased to present our new project, which straddles the border of the City of Emeryville and the City of Oakland. The site is owned by the City of Emeryville. They issued an RFP about 3 years ago, and EAH was awarded that RFP through a competitive process. The City of Oakland and the City of Emeryville has come to a memorandum of agreement that defers all of the permitting and entitlements process to the City of Emeryville. This project has applied for numerous sources, which we have secured. We have City of Oakland funding for $2 million. We have County of Alameda funding for home and CDBG funds just under $1 million. We have the infill and infrastructure grant from the state, round four, of $2.5 million. We believe we're on the verge of being awarded the new cap and trade funds to the tune of $5.4 million. And we are in negotiation also with the county of the Housing Authority of the County of Alameda for a couple of project-based vouchers there as well. So
that's
we believe
because it straddles the City of Emeryville and the City of Oakland. And we have gotten clearance from our legal counsel that as long as the units remain in the City of Oakland side you will award, we have no issues and can proceed with this.
Thank you. The project itself is a model transit-oriented high-density infill project. It is on 1.13 acres and is supporting 87 units, large family units, and 7,000 square feet of commercial space. There are, I think, we're going to end up with 7 units. There are 4 bedrooms there. Let's see. I want to address some of the questions that came up previously. We also have those same issues. There are some site contamination that the City of Emeryville will take the lead on remediation. They have an awarded EPA grant and an approved scope of work from the Regional Water Board to start the remediation, which they will do this summer. After they get the letter of no further action, we will then go back to the site and do our own specific phase two to make sure it's clean. In terms of air quality, we are doing a central makeup air system that will be distributed to each unit. It will have a central intake where we will be doing probably MERV 13 filters. The units themselves will have the continuous exhausting bath fans, but the intake will exceed the exhaust. It will positively pressure the units so that things go out rather than in. Okay, I'm happy to answer any questions you have regarding the project.
Any questions? Mr. Montgomery, you had a question? No, Mr. Castillo did.
This is 87 units, mixed used affordable housing development.
That's correct.
Units. That's what you're planning.
Yes.
And once again, what is the income makeup of who you're trying to serve?
Sure. The income will range from 30 to 60% AMI. 30% of the units will be at 30% AMI per City of Oakland requirements.
30 below or 30 above?
30% below 30% okay. AMI.
Okay. This is EAH. Okay, thank you.
Vouchers are we giving for Oakland? Is it eight?
For how many? For our 10 vouchers.
10.
10 Section 8 vouchers, yes.
Okay.
For our side.
And Alameda, I see, is how many?
They're proposing 12.
12. So this is affordable housing.
Yes.
So in terms of the affordable, these are tax credits?
100%? Yes.
So they're dealing with, what they're saying is it's affordable for everybody, all the units are affordable to 60% AMI or below, and what they're using our vouchers for, just like our projects, is to create deeper affordability for a limited number of units. In this case, it sounds like 22.
That's right? Correct.
Because I'm looking at the impact it will have on Oakland's housing. Is that enough vouchers?
Well, one thing I will say is it's creating more workforce housing. 60% AMI below. Our AMI is like 88, so say that's 60 some odd thousand. So it's that the working Oakland folks will be able to get access to housing. And with a small commitment of vouchers, 10, we're getting quite a few units.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's right. The other units are still going to be affordable at 40, 50, and 60% AMI.
Because I'm looking at the median income for Oakland's, West Oakland's side. So I'm just thinking about that. With the market that we have now with the rentals, that I'm looking at the impact that, you know, it will make, because, you know, that it'll do for Oakland. We want to make sure that, because Oakland uses that pack and save and everything, you know, that's there. And it's near that senior center that's there in Emeryville across the street. So I'm just looking at the impact that it's going to have on Oakland. And I just want to make sure that, you know, it helps, you know. So that's one question. Also, I think I saw where you... in the letter, it said something about the disenfranchised community. Mm-hmm. So you're going to work more closely with that community to make sure that you say something about jobs or something else that's in your letter. So
the location right now is that neighborhood transitioning from Oakland to Emeryville. We're located right next to EHAP, next door, and we're trying to activate the street, the San Pablo corridor. And we're considering opening some of our common amenities to our immediate neighbors on Linden Street. Those are our Oakland neighbors who've been there for a long, long time. So those are under consideration.
Okay. I see you've done very good talking about City Slickers and everything that we have there. So I just want to make sure that we will feel,
I appreciate that even though you may only have 22 Section 8 vouchers project based, that you said you would at least 30 of the units will be at 30% of median.
That's correct.
Okay, that's great. That's good. And it's just down the housing, the California Hotel is just down the street. So I think it'll be good to see another affordable housing project, I guess, one block away? Two blocks.
Yeah, and Ambassador also just finished as well. And I think that project also straddles the border of Emeryville and Oakland.
Yeah. Unless there's any further comments or questions, I'm ready to make.
Thank you. Is there it seems like the county is involved, the Alameda County Housing Authority, Emeryville, City of Oakland. Who are you going to establish any preference, like residents of Oakland preference when you do your application?
I think we're going to outreach the same way we did for Cathedral, which is in the whole area. So we expect residents from Emeryville, residents from Oakland.
But will you have a preference for residents of Oakland?
I don't think we're intending to do a preference.
Because then, how about people who live in Moraga? They're going to get the same opportunity to rent this place as an Oakland resident. Do you understand where I'm going?
Yes.
Okay.
So what happened with Cathedral Gardens, we advertised locally, and we got 5,000 applicants for 100 units. And so we ended up going into a lottery system, and we can refer to what we did there in terms of what we can and cannot do in terms of preferencing. Mm-hmm. I think there are some legal, fair housing legal issues.
Well, if you have a lottery system, that's a fair process.
That would be a fair process. Okay.
Hi, good evening. Hi. Commissioners. I'm Christina Morales with the City of Oakland. The City of Oakland is part of our regulatory agreement. We do establish that all the projects would have a preference for City of Oakland residents.
Really?
And individuals who work in the City of Oakland. There are instances, though, where other lenders may restrict it, but our preferences, we establish the preference and we try to enforce it through our regulatory agreement.
And you're in this.
So we're the one of the funding sources for this project.
Well, thank you.
And Christina, is that just for the units that actually are residing inside the boundaries of the City of Oakland or the entire project?
I anticipate we probably have to negotiate with the City of Emeryville to see how that would work. I believe they also have a preference for their side of the project as well. That's my understanding. But I would see if the two cities can work together to establish one preference, or if we have to specifically restrict the units that are in the different cities.
It would be wonderful if you would pursue that conversation. That would be great, because it's good to build housing for people who live here, for people who work here, and that's one of our objectives of this particular council. So thank you very much.
And I would just add one of our admin plan preferences for our Section 8 program are Live Work Oakland.
Did you move the item?
I'm ready to move the approval of this project.
Okay, is there a second? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you, Commissioners. Moving on to recognition of people who wish to address the commission, we have no speaker cards this evening. Yeah, we just did E. Yes. Thank you all for coming.
Yeah, thank you.
On to written communications. The monthly report is included as always, and I'm here and staff's here to answer any questions you might have about the monthly report. And I'll just walk through our other written communications behind it, if I can, because there are a couple of interesting items. One is I've included a report. It was done by the California Housing Partnership. It's an update on California's affordable housing crisis, and it came out in April, and I just wanted to share it with you. It has some interesting facts for you to know as you travel about the world trying to explain to the rest of the country what has happened with California rents, and particularly with rents in the Bay Area. It's been one of the most dramatic changes of a rental market that I've ever witnessed. Balsi's monthly report for Lion Creek Crossing is also included. Our quarterly report is also included. They continue to engage actively that community, and we're currently in discussions about place-based initiatives that can help them and help Lockwood and help the neighborhood. So I'm happy to include that. I also did a rather lengthy memo, which is pulled from one of our trade organizations, the Council of Large Public Housing Authorities, with just some interesting information about the budget and where we are. They continue, the hill, is one thing, and then whether the president will sign it is another. The words that I'm still hearing is continuing resolution is what people expect. And that's what we budgeted for in this year's budget that we considered. I don't expect dramatic funding changes one way or the other. I do expect a continuing resolution, hopefully without a government shutdown, between now and the election. But I wanted to include that. I also wanted to include some remarks that I pulled from, it's from Representative Mike Honda, who is you know, Southern County and Santa Clara and been fighting hard for years. And I thought he stood up very much in defense of our program, and I wanted to make sure we included that in recognition in case you run across he or his staff in your travels. I think it's heroic to see him do that. Additionally, Barbara Mikulski has stood up on the Senate floor of late, doing very much the same thing on behalf of all of us, speaking for Baltimore, which is an MTW agency. It's been an interesting and politicized world for the past 2 years, and it's right now kind of at the fever pitch of negotiations, which is why it's going on. The next items are our meeting schedule and some conferences you might be interested in. And the last item we included was a copy of a letter that was signed off by arguably the two most powerful senators in the country that both signed off on a letter, and I'm grateful to them and to their staff who we've been working with for the past couple of months on this item, yes, and particularly to Senator Feinstein, who was the one who first stepped up and wanted to try and put together a joint letter and has been working aggressively, and for Boxer staff, particularly Jeff Markowitz, who understands Oakland very well and understands our challenges, and I think understands, because of the work that this agency's done, the benefit of our program. And I think it's, had that not occurred, there's enough criticism of the program on the other side to really have some negative impacts on residents and what they're doing with funding out of different agencies. I won't name any, but they've witnessed what we can do here, and I think that really matters. And I think that Barbara Lee's tireless support of us as well has been really important during this fight, and I just wanted to make you aware of it. Again, if you in your travels run across any of their staff, we are deeply grateful for their support, not only of the program, but of Oakland specifically, and of us as an agency particularly. So anything you can do to help reinforce that with them is always welcome.
Thank you, Director.
And that's all the written materials. We're here for any questions, and then I'll do my comments.
Yeah, go ahead.
I have a question in regards to the continuing resolution. Mm-hmm. Is, if that continues, is that based on 2014 budget or previous year budget, or is it, which budget would it be if it's a continuing resolution?
Why do I not know the answer to this? Because I think it's 2015 was a new budget that they got passed.
So it would be based on
2015. Because I think up until 2014 was continuing from 2012. And then they were able to get something done, which improved some of our positions, by the way. Yeah. We were a little better funded. All right, no other questions. I have a few announcements then. A couple of things I want to add is this year we're excited to let you know that Lion Creek Crossing 5 has won the Gold Nugget Design Award as the PCBA competition, Lion Creek Crossing 5, Best Affordable Housing Greater Than 60 Units an Acre. So we're pleased with that. I know Phil is, and congratulate everyone in development for making it. It's really a pretty elevation. Yes. If you haven't been through and you didn't make it, it really is one of the prettiest we've done. And inside, what I really like is just the quality of all the fixtures. They'll be there for years. They're high quality, and the place is designed to last, and I really appreciate that. A couple announcements. This is for everyone in the audience as well who's left from OHA, as well as myself, or as well as the board. I just want to let you know that we have won several awards of merit from NARO, including OHAPD Police Academy League and Keeping It Real, REAL, which is an acronym. We've won awards of merit for Cathedral Gardens, Lion Creek Crossing 5, and the Resident Lead Program. I'm also happy to let you know that three nominees for awards of excellence, which I think, again, is one higher than we've ever gotten, Cathedral Gardens, Lion Creek Crossing, and Resident Lead Program have all been nominated for awards of excellence. So we'll be preparing boards and those attending to get the plaques for the awards of merit. We may just tell them we're not there if they ship them. I'll leave that up to Deputy Executive Director Wells to decide if she wants to check them all and carry them back, which is, they're heavy and large, and we've all been in that position. So we may, I will talk that over. I want to let everyone know I am participating in the Mayor's Community Safety Planning Group. We've met on May 5th. We have two more times to meet. I'm grateful of her collaborative effort with the different groups, agencies, and interests in the city to realize it's going to take more than policing to build a safe Oakland. The 94th and International Project seems to be moving toward getting started more rapidly than we had thought, and I will hopefully have some confirmation from the State Tax Credit Allocation Committee by the next meeting or in July. after they convene, but it's looking like we may have another groundbreaking in the coming year, which I'm very grateful for, and in a neighborhood that really needs it. Awesome. And I think right in line with us trying to do some place-based initiatives in East Oakland to try and encourage some development activities and some improvements to the quality of life and housing. I also want to let you know we're in escrow for the property on 56th Street. In fact, we may close within a week or so. And I want to thank Patricia Wells, Deputy Executive Director, for spearheading all of that. William Bailey for getting the work done in the unit so rapidly, and Phil in his shop, and Bridget Galka for helping getting us through the real estate morass and getting it listed. We received a number of offers, and the price was quite competitive. This summer, we have a number of summer enrichment activities. They're going to begin with the Lockwood Block Party on Friday the 12th in the early afternoon at Lockwood. If anyone's available, I intend to swing by if at all possible. We also have things, and I just want to read some of these out, that the OHA PD is doing with our kids with some volunteer staff. They're going to A's games. They're going to visit the USS Hornet. They have a bowling trip, Chabot Science and Space Center, a Sonoma Trail railroad trip, Monterey Bay Aquarium, California Academy of Science, bike trips, Winchester Mystery House, which sounds really cool. I don't know what they do there, but it sounds cool. Muirwoods National Forest. And as you know, these are summer enrichment activities, but they also, for us, it's not only the summer enrichment, so you don't lose during the summer. It also builds a real bond and a familiarity with our police officers and change the way our kids see police. So when they get older, hopefully the relationship and will continue. And I think that's one of the reasons we are here, and one of the reasons OHAPD has been so successful is they have a real and true bond with our communities and the residents and from a young age. So that that concludes most of my reports. Lastly, I just want to point out that we did lose a Housing Authority police officer in New Orleans, and I just wanted to make sure the board was aware. We have sent letters to the executive director, and the chief in New Orleans. It's a terrific and surprising loss. He was ambushed looking at a new construction site in New Orleans, and it was the first officer that department had ever lost. And it's a reminder that we have people in this agency that literally put their lives on the line every single day when they come to work. And I want to just make you aware of it and send my thoughts and prayers to the officer's family and all the people that worked with him in New Orleans, and also just recognize those folks in our department, in our agency, that come to work every day and literally do the work that they do. And that's all my report.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I have one comment. I know I've been talking a lot, but I'm just amazed at the work that we do, and we don't just do housing. We do a lot of other great stuff. So my comment is this. I know a lot goes into putting this report together, and I read it. Thank you so much. Thank you. And thank you for the natural disaster training, home ownership, health and wellness, the food pantry. Thank you very much. So much needed there. And my other question was, I think this is really needed. I was really impressed with seeing the resident-owned businesses. All of the businesses that residents are owning, what are we doing to help promote those businesses?
You want to come on up, Linda?
Thank you.
Good evening, Lenita Wheeler again. We support the residents with various marketing plans, and we'll refer them out to the various community-based organizations that can help them with marketing plans. They're each at different levels of business acumen and comfort levels. And so we help them with what it is that they want to do. Some of them are okay with online, some of them not very comfortable with the computers, and we always advertise them internally. We'll have their flyers at RAB meetings. We support them at the Resident Leadership Center. They have access to the Resident Leadership Center. We'll support them internally and help them if their business requires it with the various insurances and licenses, and of course with the supportive services request when they are asking for the additional help with the coordinators.
Thank you. We contract with them.
We have with child care services for those who have daycare. Many of them help with the cafes that take place with the Oakland Parents Together.
But it would be great if we encourage them to register as vendors if they're possible,
yes,
and take advantage of the Section 3 business opportunities.
Yes.
And perhaps Daniel can lead you in that direction so they know what's required.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay. Thank you. Yeah, go ahead.
I was just curious as to where the home buyers are able to find homes that they could afford with you know, your program's help.
All throughout the city. It all depends. People have preferences on where they want to live. And it's oftentimes condominiums or townhomes. But sometimes the money that they would use towards the homeowners association fee, depending on how they work with their realtor, they can put that instead towards a single family home.
Mm-hmm. All right. It's great news. Great accomplishment.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah, okay. Thank you. I lost my agenda.
We are at we're reports
reports
from commission committees. Anybody
have director?
Yeah,
I lost my wrong page.
No reports?
Yeah, it's me.
The Special Needs Committee met, and thank you so much, Chair. You were there, so you can add anything, and thank you, Commissioner. We met with Sarah Bedford, City of Oakland Human Services Department, and Linda Gardner of Alameda County Community Development Agency. And we explored different populations and different ways that we can expand our subsidies through our special programs, and we're very excited to work together with these groups and the other groups that they suggested. Our next step, and I think the director will add whatever I'm missing, is that we're going to create at least 2 days of roundtable discussions where we're going to be able to brainstorm ideas and then bring them back to the full board for recommendation. Mm-hmm. And very excited about this process. We're going to house more people. That's what I'm thinking. Yes, sir?
That's it. That's exactly what we're doing.
Hey.
Yeah, house more people. They report. I like that. Yes. Director, I lost my agenda. Announcements?
That's
announcements?
We're on announcements by commissioners, and it's also on the screen in front of you.
Oh, great. So you thank you for being with me here. So, announcements. Education Committee is meeting on June 16th.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct? Okay.
Yeah.
Put that on your calendar.
Yes.
Put that on your calendar. And I wanted to do a mic check. Ms. Wright, were you able to hear us? Are there any residents in the audience? Any residents out there? None. Okay. Other than Ms. Wright. Okay. And then my other more announcements. One thing I want us to do is I want to thank you all for allowing me to chair tonight. It's real humbling to be in this seat, and I appreciate you allowing me to do that because I care a lot about what we do, and I hope I did okay. And, thank you very much. I do have one announcement and one report out. My report out is, as you know, I'm on the NARO International Research and Global Exchange Committee. And at our meeting on May the 8th, I've given all the commissioners a packet. And Ms. Wells, thank you for helping me print this out. And I want us to realize the importance in realizing that our neighbors in Germany and Netherlands, what they're doing relating to public housing. And so NARO has been having a conversation with the committee, and what we're going to be doing is we're going to be doing a study exchange to the Netherlands and Germany, and that's going to be August 26th through September the 4th. And we're going to be looking at best practices, what they're doing in relating to federal disinvestment, a constant threat of devaluing housing policy, a lot of stuff. And you want to see what we can learn from them. So, commissioners, you have a copy of this. When you have the opportunity, look through it. It's really interesting stuff in there. And then my final comment, my final comment is, and I was told I needed to mention this. Yeah, okay, so my final comment just bears me, I didn't want to mention this, but I'm told I need to mention it. So I've been doing a lot of work with Alameda County Control Coalition regarding tobacco. And one of the organizations submitted my name, and I'm being awarded with the one of the awards at the annual ceremony at the Alameda County Tobacco Control Coalition on June the 3rd. It's moving for me because one of the other recipients will be Michael Sweeney, former mayor of Hayward, Berkeley City Council members Bates, Mile, Moore, Anderson, a lot of the council members, peer educator, Berkeley Youth Tobacco Educators, UCSF, Children Hospital people, and me, Community Health Education Institute. So, like I said, I sit in the seat, and I do this work with passion, and when someone submits your name, sees what you're doing, and they pick you, it's like, very humbling. So I wasn't going to share it, but I wanted to share with you that tobacco is an important topic, and I'm on a mission to save lives. Okay? Thank you. And then I think, are we done? Oh, go ahead, Director.
One other announcement. Okay. This is on behalf of Commissioner Montgomery. There is the Oakland Safety Summit this weekend. It is actually Saturday at 9 a.m. to 10:30. They'll have the welcoming session with Mayor Libby Schaft and the Chief of Police. Okay. Then the workshops will start at 10:45 to noon. That's at Laney College, which is at 900 Fallon Street. And you should be there around 9 to hear the opening comments.
Great. Thank you, Director. Yes, go ahead, Commissioner.
Thank you, Chair. I wanted to praise Director Wheeler, she's still here? Yeah. Yes. For her wonderful presentation at the NARO workshop that you did in San Diego. It was really well done, and it's a lot of good work that we could spotlight and share, and she just kind of shone. And they made her go at the end, even though we're the best.
Yeah.
So I'll have to tell them about that. But she kind of like had to do it very quickly, but she still did an excellent job, and I just wanted to hold you up. And Light, thank you so much for being there and representing.
Thank you, Ms. Biller.
The San Diego Conference had a lot of commissioner workshops, and it was really, really good. What I brought back from my commissioners was this workshop that I did on financial oversight for commissioners. And I truly recommend that our new commissioners, as well as our seasoned one, to go and attend some of these conferences. I know that I did two this year. I think I was only supposed to do one, so I ask that you take advantage of some of these opportunities. There are trainings to be had at some of these sites, and there is also some really good information. The workshop paperwork that I brought you has like a year's worth of what we are to expect as commissioners from our authority. And it really just brings up some really basic information, what our job is like and what we're about. And so I thought that I would share this with you. And thank you very much. On June 17th, the Residents United Network is going to meet in San Francisco. We are building a network across California of residents. So I'm going to bring this to our RAB on Thursday. And so I'm going to hopefully work with our Sean, right, at Family Community Partnerships to hopefully get some of our residents to San Francisco so that they could participate in this conversation that combines our voices, our residents' voices. And so hopefully that's going to be good. And thank you so much for sharing.
For my sharing.
For your sharing.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Any other announcements? Any other announcements? So to the staff of Oakland Housing Authority, I love you. I love you for everything you do for our community, our residents, and our staff, and our director, and our commissioners. So thank you. Any other comments? Okay. Are we adjourned? Need a motion to adjourn?
So adjourned.
Second. All right. Thank you. And we are adjourned.
Director, thank you for this shoot. This was good.
Director.
Oh, the ship. Director.